The brokenness in our own hearts, we're then able to bring restoration and wholeness into the world around us as well. And the journey of wholeheartedness is a journey of turning brokenness into wholeness. And so that's kind of the lens where we're looking at as we explore this psalm. So I mentioned we're going to be looking at Psalm 36, and we're looking at it from the perspective of what does it mean to live wholeheartedly. So let's have a look at that psalm. Hopefully you've got it open at your Bibles at the moment, and I've also got a bit of a different translation up on the screen. So I'm just going to read through this, and then we'll talk about it. So Psalm 36. Rebellion's declaration to the wicked person in the core of my heart. There is no fear of God before his eyes, because it flatters him with its eyes when his guilt and hating is found. The words of his mouth are trouble and deceit. He has ceased to have insight and to do good. Trouble is what he plans on his bed. He sets himself up on a no good way. Evil is what he does not reject. Yahweh, your loyal love extends into the heavens. Your faithfulness goes up to the skies. Your righteousness is like the mountains of God. Your justice is like the great deep. Human and animal you rescue, O Yahweh. How precious is your loyal love, O God, that the sons of humanity take refuge in the shadow of your wings. They are being saturated by the abundance of your house. By your river of delights, you water them. Because with you is the fountain of life. In your light, we see light. Draw out your loyal love for those who know you, and your righteousness for the upright of heart. May a foot of pride not come to me, and may the hand of the wicked not make me homeless. There they have fallen, the makers of trouble. They have been thrust down, and they are unable to rise. So each week we are looking at this psalm from a few different angles. We're not really working through this psalm verse by verse, but we're more drawing out themes that this psalm is introducing and seeing what it means in terms of living wholeheartedly. So Chris has been reminding us that our hearts have needs, right? We live in a broken world, so of course there are needs that our heart have. And so there are many places that we can go to meet these needs. However, God is the only one who's truly able to meet the needs of our hearts. He's the only true source of life, of belonging, of peace, of hope. God is the only one who can meet these things. So I want to look at this psalm again, and I want to look at it from another perspective. As I was exploring this psalm, one of the phrases that really stood out to me was that phrase, the fountain of life. And I'm sure this happens to you as well. As we read our Bibles, sometimes there's a phrase or maybe just a word or an image that's highlighted to us. We read and we're like, wow, that just like pops out. And maybe we don't know why it pops out, or maybe it stands out to us because it's a weird phrase. Like, what does that even mean? Could I encourage you, whenever that happens for you, don't just keep reading. Ponder it. Try to think about, what does this mean? Try to dig deep into, what does this phrase mean? It's standing out to you. Sometimes it's standing out to you for a reason. And so that's what I did when I saw this phrase, a fountain of life. I was like, oh, that's really interesting. That's a weird phrase. It turns out that this phrase only occurs 5 times in the whole Bible. This phrase, a fountain of life, appears 5 times in the Bible. Once in this psalm that we're reading, and then all the other times, the other 4 times appears in Proverbs. So as you can see, I've got them up there on the screen. Proverbs tells us that a fountain of life is a mouth of righteousness. The teaching of the wise is a fountain of life. The fear of Yahweh is a fountain of life. And a fountain of life is wisdom for its owner. So this is a wisdom phrase. The fountain of life has something to do with wisdom. It seems Proverbs is teaching us that this fountain of life is what we get when we live wisely. When we live according to wisdom, we receive a fountain of life. And the psalm reminds us that this fountain of life is with Yahweh. Yahweh is the fountain of life, or Yahweh has that fountain of life. So it seems to me that this is the psalmist's way of saying that God alone is our source of wisdom, and that wisdom will result in life. That wisdom, and it's not just life as in I'm alive, it's abundant life. It's life in all its multifaceted forms, in our relationships, in our thought life, in the things that we care about, having life-giving desires. And so what I want to highlight today is that God is our source of wisdom. So we're going to talk about wisdom today, which is super exciting. I love what the Bible has to say about wisdom. And so as we start to think about wisdom, I want to put it to you. So again, you can turn to the people around you and ask the question, what is wisdom and why does it matter? What is wisdom and why does it matter? So enjoy. Awesome. Well, I'm excited to hear your thoughts as to what wisdom is. Anyone willing to share what is wisdom and why does it matter? Either or both of those questions. If anyone's brave enough to... Yes, Jenny. No, we're not after the world's wisdom. That's right. Yeah, we're after wisdom that comes from God. Yes. Yeah, the wisdom is the fear of the Lord. Absolutely. Yeah, we'll chat about that. Yeah. Any other thoughts as to... Yes, Michelle. Yes. Yes, so chasing after the Holy Spirit and listening and obeying the voice of the Spirit. Brilliant. You just preached the rest of my sermon. Any other thoughts? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, off you go, Graham. You're done. Check. Much more efficient that way. any other thoughts before we move on as to what wisdom is and why it matters? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like a benchmark, like a standard kind of thing of how we live our lives. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, so you've got to learn a Hebrew word when I'm preaching. So this is a word, actually, you might already be familiar with this word because I snuck it in when I was running youth ministry. The Hebrew word for wisdom is, and you've got to clear your throats here, chokhmah. Ready? Can you say chokhmah? Yeah, that's right. And the person who's sitting in front of you can just do this. So if you want to, like what I did in youth ministry, I just called it chokmah, which is a lot nicer for our English mouths. The way I spelt it for youth was H-O-K-M-A-H. Transliteration usually has symbols. Anyway, so... Yeah, wisdom, this word, I'll just say chokmah because it's a bit nicer on the microphone. This word chokmah doesn't refer primarily to making decisions. It primarily refers to having skill, having ability. So if you are really good at your job, if you do your job with excellence, with skill, if you hone your skill, then you're using chokmah. You're using wisdom. It's really quite beautiful. So this, as you can see, the first time this word appears in the Bible is actually about making garments, making the garments for Aaron in Exodus 28. And so someone who has wisdom is someone who is able to create beauty in the world, who's able to do something with skill and with excellence. It's a word that covers the whole range of human experience, because sometimes it's about skill in making something, but other times it's skill in how we approach life, being able to approach the whole of life with skill and with ability, with wisdom. And so the first time that someone is said to have been filled with the Spirit of God, they are filled with wisdom. They are also filled with wisdom. So the wisdom has to do with the Spirit. Living by the Spirit is living by wisdom. The Spirit of Yahweh shall rest on him, a spirit of wisdom and understanding. And wisdom is, as Jenny pointed out earlier, is the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. The fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom. So we talk a lot in this community about living by the Spirit, but we don't often talk a lot about living by the fear of the Lord. So to live wisely is to live by the Spirit, but I want to talk today about what does it mean to live in the fear of Yahweh? What does it mean to live in the fear of the Lord? And I want to suggest that there's a difference between being afraid of God and fear of God. The fear of the Lord is not the same as being afraid of the Lord. Whenever I see a phrase in the Bible, I like to let the Bible define it for me rather than defining it for myself. It takes a little bit more effort. It's a lot easier to define things for ourselves, but it's worth it to let the Bible speak on its own terms rather than on my terms. So thankfully, I've done the work for us, and there's a passage in the Bible that really helps us to get a bit of an understanding as to what the fear of the Lord is, and that's in Exodus chapter 20. So let me just set the scene. Here we've got the Israelites at the foot of Mount Sinai. Moses has just been up the top of Mount Sinai, having an encounter with God, and he's given the people the Ten Commandments. And then here we are in verse 18, Exodus chapter 20, verse 18. And all the people were seeing the thunder and the lightning and the sound of the ram's horn and the mountain smoking, and the people saw and they trembled and they stood at a distance. And they said to Moses, you speak with us and we will listen, but let not God speak with us lest we die. And here's the important verse, verse 20. And Moses said to the people, do not fear. God has come to test you so that the fear of him will be before you so that you do not sin. And the people stood at a distance, and Moses approached the very thick cloud where God was. So this verse, verse 20, shows us the difference between what it means to be afraid of the Lord and what it means to fear the Lord. Because being afraid of the Lord causes us to stand at a distance. In the garden, this is what Adam did. He hid himself because he was afraid. Being afraid of the Lord causes us to stay away from God. However, Moses is also saying, the fear of the Lord is before you. It's accessible to you. You can grab hold of it. The fear of the Lord is not about standing at a distance. It's the very opposite. It's actually drawing close to God. It's actually drawing closer to him. And the purpose of it is so that you do not sin. It's something that enables you to obey God. So just to summarize, to put it as simply as I can, is the fear of Yahweh is drawing closer to God in obedience. Or the fear of Yahweh is drawing closer to God and doing what he says. It's recognizing God as king. It's recognizing that God has good things in store for us, so why wouldn't we obey what he says? This is so important when it comes to wisdom and living wholeheartedly. Remember what we're talking about this term is living wholeheartedly. It's bringing restoration to the brokenness in our world. We're talking about meeting the needs of our heart. And there are so many places we can go to meet the needs of our heart. You know, we can go to other people to meet our needs, or we can go to books, or we can go to our partners, we can go to church, or we can go to church leaders to meet our needs. Now, these things aren't necessarily bad. Obviously, some of them are quite good. However, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of Yahweh. Wisdom begins by us going to God as our first priority, not to anything else. Any other source is a false source of wisdom. Now, God may then point us to these things. He may say, you know, well, go to church, like, and speak with your spouse and all these kinds of things, or read this book. But the point is, God is our first port of call. He's our first priority. God is our true source of wisdom. And the fear of the Lord means drawing near to him in obedience. So whenever we talk about wisdom, the last thing I want us to explore is the story of Solomon. Because the story of Solomon basically always comes up whenever someone's talking about wisdom in the Bible. It's a great place to go. It's a really interesting story, as we'll see. In 1 Kings chapter 3, Solomon has this incredible encounter with God. He meets God in a dream, and God basically says, ask whatever you want and it'll be given for you. And incredibly, amazingly, the thing that Solomon asks for is an understanding mind so that he can discern between good and evil. And all of a sudden you're like, ding, 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 Genesis 3 or Genesis 2. Immediately our minds are going back to the very beginning of the story of the Bible, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. This is exactly what Adam and Eve wanted. The difference between Solomon and Adam and Eve, though, is that Adam and Eve went to a tree for their source of wisdom. They saw the tree as the source of wisdom. In fact, this is what Eve says in Genesis chapter 3, verse 6. She says, it's able to make one wise. She looks at the tree and is like, it's able to make one wise. It's able to give me knowledge of good and evil. And so they saw the tree as a source of wisdom. And now here we have Solomon. We have someone, a man who's come, who's one of the seed of the woman, the offspring of the woman, and he's not going to a tree for wisdom. He's going to Yahweh himself. So we're reading the story of the Bible and we're like, oh man, is this it? Is this the human we've been waiting for? Is this the one who's going to, like, he's not listening to the voice of the serpent. He's listening to the voice of Yahweh. So we're like on the edge of our seat and we're like, this is so exciting. This guy, he could be the one we've all been hoping for. And so he asks for a wise and discerning mind. And in verse 12, that's what Yahweh gives him, a wise and discerning mind. Now, I want to pause and have a look at one of the words here, another Hebrew word. Are you ready? So Solomon asks for an understanding mind. This is the Hebrew word shema. Now, shema is a really important word in the Bible, and it doesn't always mean understanding. In fact, it only means understanding in a few cases. Most of the time, it means to hear or to listen to. And sometimes it means not just to listen to, but you listen to the voice in order to obey. So it can also mean to obey. So what Solomon is asking for is not just a mind that understands, but it's a mind that listens. It's a mind that obeys, or a heart that obeys, because the word for mind can mean heart as well. So the question that we're left at the end of this story, we're left asking, well, is Solomon going to do it? Is he going to continue using his listening mind, his understanding mind, his obeying mind? Is Solomon going to live in the fear of Yahweh and draw close to God in obedience, or is he going to go his own way? So we keep reading. We're like, oh, this is so exciting. What's going on? As the story of Solomon continues, he does some incredible things. One of the things that he does in chapter 6 is he builds the house of God, the temple of Yahweh. This is exactly what his father David had intended to do. And Solomon's doing it. He's building the temple of Yahweh. And at the end of the chapter, we read, it took him 7 years to build this temple. And I love the way the biblical authors write, because the very next verse says, and Solomon built his own house over 13 years. So we're starting to be like, Solomon, what's going on? Is he still using his understanding mind, his obeying mind, listening mind? Or is he starting to go his own way? So we keep reading. And we come to chapter 10. And in chapter 10, there's this amazing encounter at the beginning of the chapter with the Queen of Sheba. This is a queen who's a non-Israelite queen from another country, and she's heard about the fame of Solomon. She's heard Solomon's a really cool guy. In fact, a really impressive guy. Not only that, this queen has heard about the name of Yahweh, which is amazing. This is a non-Israelite queen who's heard about the name of Yahweh. She came and she tested Solomon and she was really impressed with his wisdom. And as a result, she praises Yahweh. We're like, whoa, this could be the dude. Maybe Solomon is the guy we're hoping for, because this is exactly what Israel was supposed to do. They were supposed to represent Yahweh to the world. And as a result, the world would come to know Yahweh and to praise Yahweh. And so we're like, oh, wow, awesome. And so the queen's really impressed and she gives Solomon a great amount of wealth. And that's not the last time Solomon starts to collect wealth. Solomon, as the chapter continues, we read that Solomon gathers a whole amount of wealth. We read that Solomon received 666 talents of gold in 1 year. That number occurs twice in the Bible, by the way. Solomon acquired many horsemen and imported horses from Egypt. He made silver as common as stone. It says that he loved many foreign women who turned his heart away after other gods. And as we're reading this, we're thinking, we're already thinking, man, this is bad news. Solomon he's gone off the rails. But it gets even worse as I know we all do, if we read the laws for kings in Deuteronomy 17. I know that's a fun time for all of us to read those laws. But it is really interesting, because it's like a checklist that Solomon breaks every single rule here. He's not supposed to accumulate many horses. He's certainly not supposed to go to Egypt to do it. He's not supposed to acquire many wives for himself. Why? Because they'll turn his heart away, and he's not supposed to accumulate excessive amounts of silver and gold. And so Solomon no longer continued to use his listening mind, his understanding mind, his obeying mind. He didn't obey the laws of the Torah. He was no longer living in the fear of the Lord, because the fear of the Lord is to draw near to God in obedience, and that's not what he was doing. And so his wisdom became worthless. When Jesus was reading this passage, he saw it as pointing to himself. Jesus understood the story of Solomon as pointing to him, that he is the one who is greater than Solomon. Why? Because Solomon used his wisdom to accumulate wealth for himself, and that resulted in him being turned away to other gods. And yet Jesus is the wisdom of God. In fact, for us, Jesus has become wisdom for us. And so here's where I'd like to kind of land, and I might invite the worship team to come back up now if they can. This is both a warning and also hope for us. This is hope for us because we can see in the story of Solomon the power of wisdom. Wisdom has the power to not only transform lives, but to transform kingdoms. The wisdom of Solomon meant that this lady, this queen from the ends of the earth, came and encountered Yahweh and was able to praise Yahweh as a result. In the wisdom of Solomon, she encountered the God who created wisdom, the God who is the source of wisdom. Wisdom can transform your life from the mundane stuff to the magnificent things. We can use wisdom for everything. But it's also a warning for us because we need to continue to look to God as our source of wisdom, to hear the voice of the Spirit, as Michelle was sharing with us earlier, and obey the voice of the Spirit. Because in our journey of wholeheartedness, it is really tempting to go to so many different places for wisdom, for knowing what to do, for knowing how to get our needs met. And so my prayer really is that we may be a people who go to God for wisdom. May we be a people who live in the fear of Yahweh, who draw near to God in obedience and do what he says. What I'd like to do now is I'd like to get us all to just close our eyes, if possible, and let's spend a moment just focusing in on God. I'd encourage you in this time to be thinking about what is an area where you need wisdom. What is an area where you have a need in your heart that could be met by a variety of different things, but what's a need in your heart? Or perhaps you need wisdom just for the mundane things, the things you might not have considered you needed wisdom for. Maybe you're in the process of making something beautiful, or you just think about the everyday things or the things in your job that you do each day. Perhaps wisdom is needed in areas you didn't consider it needed. So what's an area in your life where you need wisdom? And what does it look like for you to draw near to God in that area, to invite God into that area? What does that look like? Just ask God, how do I involve you in this? How do I draw near to you in this? And what is God asking you to do? What does obedience look like in this area? It may not be something too complicated. It might just be, you know, getting on and doing it. But at least ask the question. Perhaps God's calling you to do something that you didn't expect. Approach something in a way that you wouldn't have come up with yourself. So what is God asking you to do? So I recognize that you may not have had time to fully hear answers to all those questions. So we're going to spend time in worship. And I encourage you, as we worship, continue to think about those things. What's an area where you need wisdom? What does it look like to draw near to God in that area? And what is God asking you to do? And as we go into worship, let me just finish up by praying. Jesus, I thank you that you have become wisdom for us. I thank you that true wisdom is found in the fear of the Lord, the fear of Yahweh, which means drawing near to you and doing what you say. God, may we be a people who are comfortable drawing near to you, are comfortable doing what you say, even when that's uncomfortable. May we be comfortable with the uncomfortable. May we be people who are just ready to listen to your voice and dive deeper into relationship with you. Amen.